Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican, reading stories dated October 22nd through 28th, 2020. We'll start with the article headlined County Board Approves Tentative Budget by Steve Hoffman, October 28th. Balanced, but includes cut to Health Department. The Piatt County Board Wednesday approved a tentative budget that is balanced for 2020-21, but was criticized by local health officials for including a $50,000 funding cut to the local health department during a pandemic. The budget document will now be placed on public display and considered for final approval by the board on November 12th. DeWitt Piatt Bi-County Health Department Director Dave Remmert acknowledged his department has $1 million in reserves, but said it was built up over the years to handle lags in state reimbursement in response to a 2011 state revenue crisis that led to staff cuts and the elimination of some health services. We cut staff, we cut hours at the health department in order to grow our cash balance because we are so heavily funded by grant programs and Medicaid billing, noted Remmert. That is why we grew that cash balance, not for you to take it. It was to help us pay our bills while we waited for the state to pay us back for those reimbursements. And at this time, during the worst public health crisis in any of our lifetimes, you want to cut it? I don't get it. I really don't get it, he added. The idea of reducing health department funding to help balance the budget came out of a finance committee meeting last week. It originally would have trimmed the health department levy by $50,000 and raised the general fund levy by an equal amount. When it was pointed out by Remmert that DeWitt and Piatt County Health Department levies are required to be the same through a cooperative agreement, budget consultants recommended keeping the full health department levy, but transferring $50,000 of it during the fiscal year to the corporate general fund, which has a negative balance. County Board Chairman Ray Spencer said the decision was not an easy one. I'm one of Dave Remmert's biggest fans. I sit on the Health Department Board. Dave's doing a great job, excellent work. The entire staff is doing an excellent job. I'm not discounting that at all, said Spencer. But he also commented he felt the Health Department balance of $1,022,922 as of September 18th will keep you going for a long time. Kirby Medical Center CEO Steve Tenhouse stood up for the Bi-County Health Agency, noting, we aren't out of the woods yet with the coronavirus pandemic, which set a daily record of 6,161 new cases in Illinois on October 24th. Our jobs, our school, our economy are based on us being able to go to school, being able to work, and the economy will flourish. Without the support the health department needs to increase contact tracing and not have to think about decreasing it, the faster it happens, the more you're able to stem the spread of the virus, added Tenhouse. Luke Feeney of the Kirby Foundation Board added that funding for public health is especially important now. He told the board that $50,000 in donations is enabling Kirby to provide rapid testing to school students and staff who exhibit a COVID-19 symptom. Before rapid testing, one symptom could have exempted them from school for 10 days before. With a negative test, they can now be back in a day. But funding for that effort will likely run out within 6 weeks, prompting another fundraiser to continue offering rapid tests. I'm excited about keeping kids in school and parents at work, said Feeney. Board members expressed appreciation to Bellwether, the firm hired as a budget consultant this year after a contentious process in 2019 that led to a budget that was $386,000 in the red. It's been very difficult, but this has happened over the last 10 years, and we've done the best that we can. And I appreciate Bellwether working with us on this, said County Board Member Renee Freund. Having Bellwether on board has shown me a lot of things about levies and everything. I think their expertise has been well accounted for in the county, added board member Shannon Carroll. You certainly did the heavy lifting, added Spencer. The board voted 5-0 to put the budget on display for the public viewing period. The tentative tax levy extension and appropriation documents were also approved, 4-1, with Robert Murrell voting no. Bellwether officials said new levy strategies will help take advantage of funds that are not already at their capped amount, including a new $250,000 tort fund that can be used to pay the county liability insurance claims. Some levies were trimmed to keep this year's levy extension increase at 4.9%. Linda Ash is new Cerro Gordo Village President by Christy Jankowski, October 28th. For the fourth time in 2 years, Cerro Gordo has a new village president. Tim Allen resigned the post on October 19th, saying he would be moving out of the village. Trustee Linda Ash was voted in as his replacement. Brad Williams served 2 terms as village president before stepping down in November of 2018. Dennis Ridgway was appointed to that spot, serving until stepping down in October of 2019 when Allen was installed as president. Ash served as the village clerk from 2001 to 2015 and won a term for trustee in 2016. Now she puts on a new hat as mayor. "I have worn different hats, so I guess this will be a new one to wear," she told the village board at its October 19th session. As far as will she run for mayor after finishing out Allen's unexpired term, Ash is not sure. Ash also has worked at the local post office since 2011 and drove the bus for Cerro Gordo schools for many years prior to that. To fulfill the open trustee position from Mike Martin, Jim Henderson was sworn in. Henderson stated he served as the village clerk for Oriana years ago, served on the Argenta-Oriana Fire Department for 15 years, and for 6 of those years served as secretary and treasurer, and for 7, a training officer. He also stated he held the president's seat for Macon County Firefighters Association during that time. Henderson was voted in unanimously. He will serve the next 7 months and then will have to petition in December to retain his seat. He will remain a trustee until the election in April. The village holds a caucus in December for the open positions. There are 3 trustee positions and a mayoral position up for election next April. No more snow days? It's a possibility as schools catch on to remote learning. By Steve Hoffman, October 27th. Monticello school officials have learned quite a bit about how to hold classes during a pandemic, how to pivot from in-school to all online with a day's notice, which was accomplished at the high school after positive COVID tests were recorded, and putting on a play in a coronavirus-friendly setup. Oh, and due to advances in remote learning, there may never be a snow day again. "I would guess that our students wouldn't be overly happy with that decision," joked school superintendent Vic Zimmerman at the October 21st Monticello School Board meeting. "But then we wouldn't have to make up that day at the end of the school year." Schools have prepared as much as possible during the pandemic, but unknowns are also forcing some on-the-fly adjustments this school year. Zimmerman said that is one of the positives that came out of the temporary high school building closure, which will feature all remote curriculum until November 4th. "If there is a good thing about the high school situation, it's that it allowed us to learn about some areas we need to tweak on our 100% plans. And principals were also able to go over their plans with their faculty in case they're faced with that situation," he told the board. And while online learning serves its role, the district found it cannot replace in-person education, at least at this juncture. For that reason, the decision has been made to allow some remote-only students, 87 of them across the 5 buildings, to return in person for the 2nd quarter starting November 4th. "I had several calls from parents of remote learners within the first couple of weeks. They had various reasons for wanting their students to return early. Some had changes in work or childcare situations, or the people who they were counting on to do the online learning were no longer available. Others were having trouble keeping up with the work, or their kids were missing their friends," said Whiteheath Elementary School Principal Emily Widener. "Since some of the students wanted to come back early, and the teachers wanted them to come back too, it made sense to reconsider having them wait until the end of the semester," she added. Lincoln Elementary School Principal Mary Vogt said bringing back students may give some teachers more of a load, since some will now have online learners and others may not, but that staff has been understanding. She noted that staff talked about the possibility of shifting students to make remote loads more even, but that it would have to then be done again when additional pupils arrive in January. Even though we have some people who will keep doing what they've been doing, some who will have no more remote instruction in the afternoon, and some who will still do a hybrid model, the staff attitude has been one of support and understanding that there is no fair, there is no equal in a year like this, said Vogt. Zimmerman said about 1/3 of the district's online learners will come back for the second quarter, reducing the online-only percentage from 15 to about 10%. He did say that if a similar-sized segment is added for the second semester, some measures may be needed to ensure social distancing, and that transportation routes may need to be added for the same reason. The educational format for the second semester will likely resemble the first, said the superintendent. In-person instruction 5 days per week with an online option for those uncomfortable with attending in a school building. The possibility of outsourcing the online portion was considered, but will not be pursued at this time. Zimmerman said one problem is that if close contacts are quarantined, they cannot jump from in-person to an outsourced curriculum and back very easily. We want our staff to be teaching our kids, he added. Initial reports of the Kirby Medical Center rapid test for COVID-19 have been good, with 85 Monticello students being tested in the first week. Facilities update. Finishing touches are being put on the Seavers Center Gymnasium, which is now being used by elementary school students during the day. Sports practices had also begun, but are paused with the high school not having in-person learning until at least November 4th after its COVID-19 cases. Meanwhile, renovation work continues on the original 1921 high school section. Zimmerman said about $50,000 in contingency funds will be used for unexpected plaster and drywall replacement. A change order for the project was also approved, adding $2,221 for a different fire door setup at the north end of the 1966 hallway of the high school. Art students have been moved back to their classroom, which means renovation work on the media center can begin. The project, originally scheduled to be complete by the start of the 2021-22 school year, is well ahead of schedule. We're winding down, said project manager Chris Ularik. I would say that the majority of the work will be complete by March or April. Then we'll be doing punch list items, finishing odds and ends, everything like that, up until May, said Ularik. The $35 million effort includes the new 1,600-capacity gymnasium, new classroom wing at Washington, a two-story high school science lab and classroom wing, and renovation work throughout the high school Washington Elementary campus. A new HVAC unit was also added, bringing air conditioning to all classrooms for the first time. The board accepted a bid of $308,000 from Frank Cooney Company for a third phase of furniture purchases. This round will outfit the high school media center and Washington classroom. In other action, the board approved the hire of Linda Hayes as a long-term substitute for a third-grade classroom. Approved the revised retirement of High School Secretary Brenda Cummings at the end of the 2020-21 school year. Approved a leave of absence for a Lincoln Elementary speech pathologist, Ashley Barnes. Heard from middle school principal Mark Hughes that 127 students, 34%, received straight A's the first quarter. About 67% received all A's and B's. Those are numbers I am not used to seeing, said Hughes, referring to other school districts he had worked in. Was told that there was on Sage's strut this year, but that the elementary school PTO had raised $18,000 with a pie sale. Received an update on the Equity and Diversity Study Group, which has held 3 meetings. After 2 additional sessions, the ad hoc group will deliver a report to the school board. Was told the Clinton YMCA has cooled on the idea of purchasing Lincoln Elementary School, but may consider leasing a portion of it. Zimmerman said the issue will likely be brought before the school board early next year. With the classroom addition made to Washington Elementary, Lincoln will be closed next fall. The district could also choose to sell the building. Heard that the district will need to go out to bid for a transportation contract for 2021-22. Current vendor Central Illinois Bus Service did not want to extend for a single year. When the contract goes to bid, there is a guaranteed 3-year agreement for the company awarded the contract. And was told health insurance costs for the calendar year 2021 will rise 12.3% after the district had higher claims than average in the cooperative it belongs to. Death notices. Patricia Ann Purcell, 90, of Monticello, passed away on October 27th at Arbor Rose, Monticello. A private family service will be held. Interment will be in Woodlawn Cemetery, Urbana. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Association or an organization of the donor's choice. Nursing Home, Back to Weekly Testing, by Steve Hoffman, October 27th. A Piatt County nursing home employee tested positive for COVID-19 last week, which means the facility has resumed weekly testing of residents and employees. It is the fourth employee to test positive at the nursing home since August, but there have been no residents diagnosed with coronavirus. It also results in further restrictions there, including in-room dining only and no gathering in open areas. The nursing home has not been allowing visitors inside the facility since it went on a self-imposed lockdown in mid-March. With cases on the rise, Porter expects there to be more positive tests and told his nursing home committee Thursday that he will likely enter into a contract for consistent testing of employees and residents. There were no positive tests among residents in the most recent round of testing. We may have to reach out to a larger lab and get testing done every week, because I don't foresee this ending. I foresee us every week, week and a half, getting a positive employee, and we just need to have something more permanent in place to test, added Porter. Halloween open house at DeLand Business, October 24th. Von Baron Automotive in DeLand will host a Halloween open house at 630 North Highway Avenue from 3 to 5 p.m. Saturday, October 31st. It is free and open to the public. Activities will include pumpkin painting, photo backdrops, treat bags, and horse rides. Mama D's barbecue truck will be set up and selling food. COVID-19 precautions will be observed, including hand washing and sanitizing stations. For more information, check out the business Facebook site or email vonbaronautomotive@outlook.com or call 217-619-3867. COVID update, 22 new cases in 3 days in Piatt County, by Steve Hoffman, October 27th. Local health officials reported 22 new cases of COVID-19 in Piatt County on Friday through Sunday, along with 19 new cases in DeWitt County. In Piatt, 8 of the new cases were in Monticello, 7 in Atwood, 4 in Cerro Gordo, 2 in White Heath, and 1 in Mansfield. For DeWitt, there were 6 cases in Clinton, 5 in Wapella, 3 in Weldon, 2 in DeWitt, and 1 each in Farmer City, Kenny, and Hayworth. DeWitt County's overall case total is now 334, Piatt County's 267. DeWitt Piatt Bi-County Health Department Administrator David Remmert also responded to complaints received about his department's data reports, which are released 2 to 3 times per week to the media and on the health department website, www.dewittpiatthealth.com. Remmert said there is a reason why the local agency's numbers differ from ones released by the state. The difference you see is a lag in data reporting from area providers. The state operates with a disease reporting system called the Illinois National Electronic Disease Surveillance System, in which all disease cases are to be reported, he said. Not all providers, clinics, and labs report their data in this system in a timely, routine fashion. In order for us to give you the most comprehensive and detailed data we do, we have to work through multiple providers and multiple sources of data from all providers in our area that report to us. it is an especially burdensome task. It is that task, which includes contact tracing, that limits the data reports he releases to 2 to 3 per week, he added. Please be patient and understanding. Understand that cases are spiking locally, statewide, and nationally, said Remmert. As for contact tracing of school-aged children, the health official said the department does not start that process until it receives notification of a positive test directly from the clinic, lab, or provider that processed the test. While some parents may have received notification of a positive or negative test result, often we are not notified of that disease status until several days later, he said. In one case, Remmert noted there was a 6-day lag between the positive test and the health department receiving notification from the lab. Featured, How We Are Doing Things Now, Adjustments at Allerton Park, by Steve Hoffman, October 22nd. Allerton Park and Retreat Center was one of the first entities to reopen some of its facilities after the pandemic shutdown in March, allowing people much-needed access to the South Side trails by May. The formal gardens were opened shortly after, but it took until recently for weddings to resume, and only for smaller crowds. In addition, many activities that would have been in-person gatherings in the past have been shifted to live streams and online viewing in recent months. Staff took on the challenge, hosting things from virtual trail walks to trivia contests among employees. We asked Allerton Director Derek Peterson how they are doing things now at the park. Piatt County Journal Republican, how are things done differently at Allerton amid COVID-19 precautions? Derek Peterson, all of our COVID-19 standards are vetted through the University of Illinois and therefore meet very stringent requirements and expectations. I'm thankful for the university's leadership during this time. With that, I think the most glaring difference is the closeness to the community that we, as staff, have come to expect. Gathering with the Allerton community several times a month became normal. So normal that now I miss that personal connection very much. JR. The park has made quite a few adjustments in order to allow people to engage, either in person or online. Give me some examples. Peterson. I think the hardest adjustment is the 50-person rule. We have to be strict about that. It's not just 50 people gathered in an audience. It's 50 people gathered in one space, which includes staff, vendors, and others. We went from trying to engage as many people as possible to trying to engage fewer than 50. It's possible, and the staff is doing it. It is just a new attitude that we have had to grow into. JR, speaking of events, the holiday lighting is still on, correct? Will there be limitations for in-person touring? Peterson, yes and yes. During busier weekends, we are limiting the audience to 50 people per hour. We're monitoring the population throughout the week. And if we see trends change, that hourly limitation might become more regular. Our safety plan takes into account the distance of the walk, a one-way walking pattern with plenty of stops and opportunities to spread out. Masks are highly recommended and required if the 6 feet distance cannot be maintained. All of this said, we feel like this is one of the safer activities to engage in during the winter months. JR, what has been the most difficult adjustment to make? Peterson, remote working and the lack of in-person meetings. Our staff is pretty tight. It's the way we rebuilt our organization. It's hard not seeing other staff members popping in to just say hi and feeling that bond. JR, is there a positive to all of this? Peterson, virtual content is likely here to stay. We can engage with a lot of people very quickly through virtual hikes, virtual concerts, and virtual programming. This week, we are meeting with a representative from Biltmore. Lauren Henry, a Monticello native, is working with us on a virtual event where she will talk about the two estates. That wouldn't have happened so easily last year. JR, weddings have started up again, correct? Peterson, yes, slowly and with limits. The hardest limits are the 50-person rule, limited gathering space inside the mansion, and no dancing. JR, what does your crystal ball tell you about when things will be back to normal? Peterson, normal? I'm not sure that is so easily defined these days. I like to think about the rhythms and sequences I see in nature. I keep my head in the trees. To an oak, nothing has changed. I believe that is why we've seen an increase in visitors this year. Allerton tends to be that normal our community has come to expect. For events, we're monitoring the situation, working with the university, and falling back on safety first. I see restrictions continuing well into 2021, but I do hope that we all can find a rhythm that works for us. I know that when it's safe to come back together, we will have one of the bigger celebrations Allerton has ever offered, dancing included. October 31st festivals. Haunted Woods of Creek Hill Halloween. The Haunted Woods are located in the heart of the Hillbilly Devil's Triangle, formed by Springfield, Decatur, and Taylorville. These three towns provide safety from the evil that lurks in the timber, but no one is ever truly safe. Bordered by I-72 to the north, Route 29 to the west, and Route 48 to the east, the Hillbilly Devil's Triangle is legendary for disappearances, sightings of strange creatures, and cars on cinder blocks in front yards. The haunt is spread out over almost 10 acres of wooded landscape north of Mount Auburn, Illinois. Beautiful by day, the haunted woods of Creek Hill take a turn for the worse when night falls. Many thrill seekers have visited the haunted woods since tours began in 2011. Most of them made it out alive. Well, a few of them walked into the haunted woods and walked out to tell about it. You have to ask yourself, are these woods safe? Well, that's all we have time for today. This has been Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican, reading articles dated October 22nd through October 28th. Please be well. I look forward to reading with you again soon.